It's a song I wrote for no one, and no one's gonna hear. 'Cause I'd sooner die than sing it. There ain't nobody here. Followed her from Brooklyn, from Brooklyn's where she ran, breaking hearts, stealing cars, smoking cigarettes. Well, she's pretty and she's skinny, and she hasn't got a clue that I'd be staring at her coffee as the cup begins to cool.
And welcome to No Filler, the music podcast dedicated to sharing the often overlooked hidden gems that fill the space between the singles on our favorite records. My name is Quentin. I've got my brother Travis with me as always, and we are continuing into our distortion-free November. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right, man. I think that's going to hold true for the next two artists we got planned.
Yeah, I hope so. We got to take a breather after you just shoved metal down our throats for a month straight.
I think what you meant to say is shoved metal up your ass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
If we're going to, you know.
Yeah, right up the keister.
If we're going to do a callback to Metallica.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was the name that they intended for Kill 'Em All to be called until the American markets were probably not going to like a name like that.
I'm sure you had that planned as a question on your metal pop quiz, so I would have missed that one too, dude. So this one's going to be short and sweet. I don't have that much information on this band. This is a band called Neva De Nova. You remember our dear friend Larry? We had him on our podcast to cover Nick Drake.
You know, it's funny, the intro song that you played, I was actually kind of reminded of Larry Loge's vocals a little bit. Do you think he was influenced by them?
It's possible, dude. Yeah, yeah, he was the one who showed me these guys. And the song in our intro was called Brooklyn, which was on their debut album, which was self-titled. It came out in 2002. So it's around the same time period as, you know, when Coldplay kind of...
Mm-hmm. This was the kind of music that was, you know, the indie bands were making back then. Like, this was kind of... This was it, you know? This was that... Yeah. What do they call it? The whole, like, you know, quiet is the new loud movement.
Yeah.
I think this would be in line with that. It's not necessarily in the same spirit as what Kings of Convenience were doing, but that same idea, you know? Softer rock music.
So the thing about these guys, the main guy, his name's Jake Bellows, and according to an interview that came out in, I believe, 2003, yeah, he had already been performing as Neva De Nova for 11 years.
Wow.
Before their first album got released on a major label. And from what I gather, it's kind of one of those things where he just kind of, he was almost purposely kind of steering away from the spotlight. He liked to release his own things. He really didn't have any like ambitions to take this, you know, to like go on tour and like just blow up. That's just not something he wanted to do. He's very connected to the music scene and like the community where he started the band, which is in Omaha, Nebraska. I thought that was interesting that, and that's crazy to think about, being in a band for 11 years before you get your first quote-unquote major, you know, record label release. A lot of his music is very melancholy and sad. A lot of the lyrics are honestly pretty depressing, at least under Neva De Nova. Let's see, the last full-length album that Neva De Nova released was in 2013, which was called New Ocean. Since then, he's stepped away from that, and he's doing kind of his solo thing now. And he's kind of realizing, like, he's looking back at, hang on, let me see. He says, looking back, I noticed that much of my older music was referencing the sadness and the pain that exists in the world. I felt like that was the opposite effect that I wanted to have, so I took some responsibility for my actions and decided I wanted to change. I want to help make the world into a nicer place to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, his solo stuff is a lot more positive and pessimistic and optimistic. Hmm. And any, like, there's one interview that I found with this guy that honestly isn't worth, like, sharing for this episode, but he just seems like a super down to earth guy. You know, really humble and all that stuff. He doesn't seem, I don't know, dude. You know, there's a lot of singer songwriters that are kind of
up their own butts, dude.
Yeah, he seems kind of like the opposite of that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, anyways, there's not a lot out there on the internets with this band.
Well, I was gonna say, if you go 11 years, just kind of grinding, you know, doing your own thing and like just making music, having not been picked up by a major label, I feel like that says that you're not in it for the fame and like the notoriety. Otherwise you would have given up already, you know, cause you know,
yeah,
if you're doing it for 11 years straight, like you're doing it cause you love making music, you know?
Yeah. There was I'll post this, a link to this video in our show notes. So there's this thing called, the Lilac Sessions, where they post a high quality video of a concert. And this is local to Omaha, Nebraska. And they kind of splice in segments of interview clips with the artist that they're covering. And Jake Bellows performs, you know, at a local, like, tiny little bar in Omaha. And one thing he likes about touring is he likes the idea of being able to share his message, you know, or like just being able to spread good vibes to as many people as he can across the country. Like that's how he thinks about touring. So it's not about, you know, selling records or whatever. I mean, I don't think any band would say straight up, oh, dude, I'm just touring for the, you know, to sell records. But, you know, like it's just when you listen to this guy, like I said, he just seems like a super chill, normal ass dude, you know, super humble. And anyways, this is just a super nostalgic band for me, you know, and I kind of felt like it, like his voice kind of reminds me of Chris Martin. And it came out around the same time. That's honestly the only reason that I picked Neva De Nova to be a sidetrack for Coldplay, because like there's nothing else really tying them to Coldplay. But I wanted to share one of my favorite songs from Neva De Nova that came out on their 2005 album, The Hate Yourself Change. And we're just going to play the whole song, because why the fuck not? This is a song called She Can't Change.
Don't want
too hard, be honest. If it's too hard, be honest. If it's too hard.
Great song, man. It's got such a good vibe to it, you know?
Yeah. I'm a sucker for those harmonies, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, he kind of goes back and forth with himself. You know, like, he'll start singing at the end of, you know, a phrase that he just said.
Yeah.
Sort of overlapping, almost delay, you know, to his vocals. But yeah. It kind of reminded me of, like, the same kind of feeling that a lot of REM music kind of conveys, that kind of, like,
really,
yeah, a little bit.
I would never thought REM, but you're a much bigger REM fan than I am.
I mean, I'm not saying that he sounds like Michael Stipe or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, it's got that same vibe as, like, that 90s rock era, mm-hmm. at least that song. But this came out in 2002, you said?
No, this came out in 2005. This was on, this wasn't on their debut record, which is, the song that we introed in, was from their self-titled debut from 2002. This is on an album called The Hate Yourself Change, which came out in 2005. And also, one thing I wanted to point out, in between this album and their debut, they released a record called One Jug of Wine, Two Vessels, which came out in 2004, and it was a collaborative effort with Bright Eyes.
Mm.
Basically, it was Connor Oberst, which is, he's the main dude, the singer-songwriter for Bright Eyes. So they're all good friends now. Connor Oberst, who I believe is also hails from Omaha, had heard Neva De Nova before and was super into them. And from what I've read, it's kind of like, Connor brought Neva De Nova in with him to record this album, just helping out friends because he felt like they needed to be heard. And yeah, so since then they've been released on Saddle Creek Records. You've heard of that record label, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bright Eyes. I know Frilo Kylie, which is Ginny Lewis's band. Yep. They were on Saddle Creek. They were all kind of super close knit. It's what I've gathered from that, like, collective. You know, they all kind of show up on each other's records. I know that Jake Bellows was pretty, he contributed heavily to Bright Eyes' album called Casadega, which came out in 2007. So anyways, they're all, like, really close knit. So I feel like that's kind of what put Neva De Nova on the map. Or at least, you know, made them a little bit more well known, like in the, like, indie world, you know, of music, was that bump from Connor Oberst. Anyways, that's all I've got for Neva De Nova. And I think we should dive into some What You Heard, dude. We got time. Let's do it.
Oh, we got nothing but time.
We got nothing but time, dude. Yeah, so hey, real quick, dude, before we get into our What You Heard, let's take a quick break. And we're back, and you want to start us off this time, dude?
Yeah, let me start us off here. So, I watched this great documentary on Netflix that I highly recommend to anyone who is a music lover. And if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're a music lover. So, it's called Echo in the Canyon, and it is a documentary about music from this area in California called Laurel Canyon, which is where bands like Crosby, Stills, and Nash came up. Beach Boys came up in Laurel Canyon. Mamas and the Papas.
Like they started out and were like residing in Laurel Canyon?
Basically, yeah. It's this neighborhood in okay. Los Angeles called Laurel Canyon, where I'm just going to list off some of the names here. The Byrds, the Beach Boys, Buffalo Springfield, Mamas and the Papas, they all sort of started in this area. Or like, you know, it was kind of like Greenwich Village, right?
I was about to say, like, this sounds like very similar. This sounds like the same bands that were hanging out in Greenwich Village.
Yeah. So, okay. This is kind of where it was like a mecca for musicians and stuff. So anyway, this just sort of covers those particular albums that were kind of made out of that neighborhood and the artists that would sort of run in that circle, you know. So anyway, this documentary was hosted by Jacob Dylan, as in Bob Dylan's son.
As in the Wallflowers, right?
Exactly, as in the lead singer for the Wallflowers. So he put together a concert and an album to sort of be a companion to this documentary, where he and musicians like Beck and Fiona Apple, Cat Power, Regina Spektor, Nora Jones,
Eric Clapton, dude.
Right. They all contributed to this record and showed up on the record or played live with him when he did this show. So anyway,
dude, Josh Homme's on here too, dog.
Really? Well, he didn't show up on the documentary.
Well, he's on one of the he sings. There's a song called "She" on this album. It's Jacob Dylan and Josh Homme.
There you go. I kind of wish they had featured him in the documentary, but anyway. So there's one song in particular. It was a cover of a Mamas and the Papas song called "Go Where You Wanna Go," and this is Jacob Dylan and Jade Castrinos, who was in a band called Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. So anyway, let's give it a listen to. Yeah, like I said, this is some Mamas and the Papas cover.
You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do.
There's some pipes on that girl, dude.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things I really liked about it. You got to watch the documentary, man. It's just a really cool look at that era and like how this particular neighborhood sort of spawned all of these albums. Like Mamas and Papas, that song that they're covering there is off of their debut album. So
yeah,
they wrote their debut album around that time, and you know, in and around that neighborhood, you know, hanging out with the, you know, famously we've talked about how David Crosby and Mama Cass would essentially, you know,
partake in drugs. Is that where we're going with there?
Just stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm still really pissed off at fucking Crosby.
It was the 60s, man. That's what they were doing.
You know what though? Come on.
Anyway, yeah.
You know what? And okay, so I'm a big fan of Bob Dylan. And it's one of those things I've learned about how people feel about Dylan. You either love him or you hate him, and it all comes down to his voice.
Yeah.
And the only reason I bring that up, maybe Jacob being his son and all, you know, like took some influence from Bob's, like the way he sings. Jacob's voice is just so much better than his dad's.
Oh my God, yeah. That's something
like, it does sound like Bob Dylan.
He's got some of Bob Dylan's like
cadences.
Yeah. But yeah, he's got a great voice, man. Really,
man. I love the Wallflowers, dude. That what's that one song that you always think about when you think of the Wallflowers? I can't think of it right now, dude.
What their one song?
Yeah, let me look it up. If you can think of it, unless you can think of it off the top of your head.
No, it's
One Headlight.
One Headlight,
dude. Yeah. I love that song, man.
Yeah, it's a great. He's got such a great, you know, he's got some like some depth to his voice, if that makes sense. Like he's got some soulful.
He's got some Bob Dylan vibes, dude. But it's not like, you know, as tortured and I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a Bob Dylan fan, but his voice isn't great. You know, it's not great at all. It's shitty.
It is. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's also, you know, it was more about his lyrics, right? I mean, and more about like the stories he was telling and all that good
totally stuff. Totally. Thank you. At least thank you for saying that because. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, thank you. Because there's a lot of people that just don't understand how you could like Bob Dylan at all.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's about the storytelling. Like, that's you know, just you got to get past his voice.
I mean, yeah, that's all it is. That's all there is to it, you know? He was a great songwriter.
There we go. All right, so.
Anyway, I really like that it's Bob Dylan's son, you know? And the thing is, he's interviewing all of these musicians. So he interviews David Crosby. He interviews Michelle Phillips of Mamas and the Papas. He interviews Tom Petty. So this was made before Tom Petty died, obviously. He interviews what's his name from the Beach Boys?
Fucking Brian Wilson?
Dude. Yeah, he interviews Brian Wilson. So anyway.
Cool. I'll check it out for sure, man.
You definitely watch it. It's a great documentary. You get to see Beck, you know, do a cover with Dylan and Regina Spektor. It's just really cool. Again, so that documentary is called Echo in the Canyon. It's on Netflix. You can probably find it elsewhere, but go check it out.
Cool.
What you got, Q?
All right, so this is a band called Squid. Ever heard of them?
I have not.
So this is a five-piece. They hail from London. They're under the post-punk category. But as soon as I heard this song, dude, I got like these heavy B-52 vibes. I think you're going to really like this song, dude.
Okay.
I feel like they've got like some LCD sound system vibes as well. I don't know much about them, but the only thing they have so far is singles. So like they're brand new. Like, you know, they don't have any full length album yet. And I'm just going to let the music play for itself. This is a song by Squid called The Cleaner.
Yeah, dude, I liked it. So I was trying to keep track of all the different like sounds or like influences that I heard there. Oingo Boingo.
Whoa. Okay.
Modest Mouse.
Yeah.
Or at least the vocals. Talking Heads. A little bit.
I was hoping you were going to say that, dude, because I'm not as big a Talking Heads fan as you, but yeah, I was getting those vibes as well.
I was getting, the reason I said Oingo Boingo is it kind of reminded me of, you know, Weird Science a little bit.
Yeah, dude, they're definitely pulling from the 80s. When I found out that this was a brand new fucking song, it blew my mind when I heard it.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it.
Yeah, it's good. It's cool. Like, it's one of those bands, like, man, I got to see them live. Like, I bet they put on a show.
Yeah, it's a good mashup of, like I was saying, kind of a bunch of different influences there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited to see what else they got for us. Because like I said, like they've only released like a handful of singles. Yeah, so that's a band called Squid. And that was a song called The Cleaner. So that's it, man. That's all I got for today. We're going to bring another beloved indie band to you next week for a full length.
Who would that be, Q?
I'm not going to spill beans, dude. Come on. But let's just say that there's a song on this album that was part of a movie soundtrack.
A couple of their songs were heavily featured in a very well-known indie film.
Yeah. Basically, in the film, the character references the song. Like, it's not that it was just in the movie like, as a soundtrack. Like, she mentions the name of the band in the movie and says the song's going to change your life. And I feel like I just gave it away, but whatever.
Well, that's the thing, man. It's like, you know, if you have an idea of what we're talking about, the director / screenplay writer / one of the stars of the film, like his music is all over. I almost feel like he made a mix CD and then is like, hey, you know what? I'm going to put all these songs in my movie.
Yeah. Anyways, but I'm so excited to play some tunes from this record.
It's a great record, man. It's got a lot of great.
Yeah.
It really does capture that indie sound. Like when you think about the term indie music and how broad it is now, you know, and how it really is hard to nail down a certain sound. I feel like there are a couple albums that to me like encapsulates the indie music sound, and that's one of them.
Oh yeah, dude, and we'll get into all this. And you know what? I wonder if when we do this and like purposely not mention the band and just continue to talk about them, like, do people hate it? Or they're like, God, just fucking tell me what band you're talking about.
Dude, we gave lots of clues here.
Yeah, you're right.
Lots of clues.
So we're gonna close this out with another song from Neva De Nova's 2005 release, The Hate Yourself Change. And that's it for today. As always, check us out on the Pantheon Podcast Network. Go to pantheonpodcast.com. There you'll find all of the awesome podcasts that are in our network. It's all music podcasts. That's what I love about being part of this network, dude. We're just surrounded by a bunch of music nerds just like ourselves. You are sure to find another podcast within this network that you will love. Hop onto our website, nofillerpodcast.com. There you can see our track lists, all the songs we covered. We've got links to all of our resources, and we'll throw some music videos and interviews on there as well. And that's going to do it for us today. Again, we're going to close this out with another Neva De Nova song. This song is called Blackest Heart. And thank you so much, as always, for listening. We will shout at you next week. My name is Quentin.
And my name is Travis.
Y'all take care. I'm in trouble.
jumping the gun. I'm in trouble.
Hey diggers, this is an announcement. Episode 18 is on the way. We are in the final polish. All the bodywork, sanding, and the paint has been put on this rocket ship, so we just need that final coat to finish. Coming out of the last few episodes of the Rock and Roll Archaeology podcast that concentrated on specific geographies like London, LA, San Francisco, and New York, we are now in the home stretch of our time in the 1960s. And so with this one, it's not about a place on a map, but a year in the life. It's called Episode 18, 1969, and it's a year so big in rock and roll, it'll take two episodes to tell the full tale. Part 1 will cover mostly the first half of the year. We'll spend most of our time in the UK checking in with the Beatles as they are beginning to fray internally, while friends and competitors, the Rolling Stones, are about to become the greatest rock and roll band in the world. Of course, the Fab Four are still able to be the Beatles, so therefore they are not going down without a fight. And the Glimmer Twins must make a sacrifice to achieve the greatness of that 68-73 run of peak Stones. Then we go beyond England and America and venture into outer space, where we dissect the moonshot and how it affected society and the arts. So, like the sci-fi that surrounds the very real human endeavor, we will peek into the future ourselves with some rock and rollers that will really take us into the next decade. So hold tight. It won't be long now. It's coming, and we think you will all be pleased. Episode 18, 1969, Part 1. Tell a friend.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.